It's time to kick back and grab a beer, because the space cadets are here. Talking about space and the universe, let's all be giant science nerds. We're the space cadets, yeah, we're the space cadets.
And we're back. Welcome to episode 2 of the Space Cadets Podcast. Tonight's topic, extraterrestrial life. My name is Todd, and I'm excited that we have a full crew on tonight's show. You remember Nate, Mark, and Alex from last week's episode, but let's welcome our newest cadet, Will. Will, welcome to the show.
Hey, Todd. Thanks for having me on. I'm very much a novice to space, but excited to be here and participating in the podcast. So thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're excited you're here. Question for everybody on the call today. Who believes in aliens? Let's go around the horn. Will, are you a believer?
Absolutely.
And how about you, Nate?
I believe in aliens, and I've got an equation to prove it.
So the Drake equation?
Yes, it is, Will. Seem like you're very well informed about it. So why don't you go ahead and share what you know about the Drake equation?
No, Nate, by all means, go ahead.
Okay, so it's a long equation. It has 7 variables, and taken all together, they should tell us what the number of civilizations in our galaxy is, with whom communication might be possible. And
so what's the answer?
42.
There's a lot of aliens.
There's a lot of possibilities for aliens out there.
Could all agree with that. Is there actually a better question? Is there anybody that doesn't believe in aliens?
I think it depends. I would say yes and no. I wouldn't be surprised if we find unintelligent life.
It's all around us.
It's everywhere. It's on this podcast.
Half of this podcast. Yeah, exactly. Why don't we start talking a little bit about something that is down here on Earth, a little more terrestrial, and that's Area 51. So beyond just the recent Facebook event that was placed where somebody got 1.5 million people to sign up to say yes, that they were going to storm Area 51, which didn't happen yet, by the way. What do you think about Area 51? Do you think it lives up to all the alien hype, or is it just a big government hangar?
I don't know. It's a good question. I think that there is something top secret that is going on there. I don't know if it has to do with any kind of extraterrestrial life. If there are 1.5 million people who are willing to be that cannon fodder to ultimately line up and take a 1.5 million for the team to ultimately figure it out, I mean, I'll be on my couch watching to find out.
So there was they did get actually 200 people of that 1.5 million to show up. So it's a pretty low conversion rate, but they got 200 people to show up. Two of those people actually tried to do something. One was, and they were both detained. One was detained and charged with alcohol-related charges. and the other one, and I honestly have no idea how this is possible or what he possibly could have been doing, but was arrested for indecent exposure. So he was trying to give the aliens a show, I think.
That's great.
We want to find aliens. Like, people are lining up to storm this place. People want to find aliens. We've had the SETI program going for decades. There's all these movies, there's books, there's all these efforts made to scan the skies. And so despite that and the equation we discussed earlier, it's an enormous question why we haven't seen aliens yet in such a big universe where we're all looking for them. So
I'm not convinced Area 51 is related to aliens. In fact, I would make a statement that says I do not believe there are any aliens in Area 51 or that we've ever experienced here on Earth.
Yeah, and I think the key word there you used, Nate, is the size or the scope of the universe, right? How big it is. But I think, Todd, you asked the question, do we believe in aliens? And I think cumulatively we all say yes. But the follow-up question to that, in my opinion, is have aliens visited Earth? And I say no. I don't think there's been any aliens in visited Earth yet, and I think Area 51, to your point, doesn't have anything to do with extraterrestrial life except for maybe some research.
Totally agree. Do you guys know how the whole rumors got started about Area 51 and the whole situation there? So it was built in 1955 to test these high altitude reconnaissance planes called the U-2, right? And so over the course of history, they've tested those planes, other stealth related planes, right? Things that are top secret that it back in those times and into the 70s, they didn't really want the Soviet Union to have access to this type of research. So they kept it really quarantined in this one area. in the 70s, they heightened their security and they started to really hunker down on what information was able to go in and out of this place. And then in 1989, there was a reporter who interviewed a guy named Bob Lazar. And Bob Lazar is an inventor and an engineer. And he claims that he was hired by the government to work in Area 51 relating to alien technology and alien spacecrafts, right? And so that's really where this whole, other than the secretiveness of the institution itself, this is where all those rumors started with this one guy. And apparently it was some downed UFO in Roswell, New Mexico, which is where that rumor comes from. And he was hired by the government to work on this, right? So now the government has since dismissed the claim in the 90s. And stated that what happened in Roswell was just the results of a weather balloon crashing and some gear. And to be honest with you, like in my opinion, that's probably a lie, but I still don't think it's alien related. It's probably just us protecting our assets. And so, you know, there was some other interesting things that happened with Area 51 as well, where, for example, in the early 2000s, George Bush made the area exempt from litigation, which would expose any classified information, because there was a huge group of people that started to do these class action lawsuits about what type of information was being held from the public in this area. Here's a pop quiz for the group. Area 51 was originally called something else. It was sort of a nickname for it. Does anybody know what that nickname was?
I have no idea.
It sounds like a place that Michael Jackson may have owned. All right. The answer is Paradise Ranch.
I was going to say the Neverland Ranch.
I was going to say the Neverland Farm.
That's close.
I was going to say I drove by Area 51 about 10 years ago.
Really?
That explains a lot.
Yeah.
He's an alien.
I did not see any aliens to get to the point.
But did you see anything weird?
We were driving from Las Vegas out to Death Valley National Park and passed by Area 51 on the way. And there were a bunch of checkpoints off the highway with Army vehicles, things like that, but everything else is set so far back you can't see anything. That was my personal experience.
And they're allowed to take you out. If you get too close, they're allowed to take you out. I think they have full permission to.
Yeah, they can probably even do experiments on you if you get too deep.
But they can't take 1.5 million people out at once.
I bet they could.
They can. With the alien technology.
Well, that was their main tagline on the Facebook group is they can't get us all.
They can get enough of you to deter all of the rest.
Yeah.
Well said, Mark.
And all it would take is one bullet and you'd see everybody flying the opposite direction. Well, cool. So, I mean, Area 51, up for debate always, right? I think we're, at least on this call, I think we're somewhat of an agreement that it's probably just the government hiding military secrets and I don't know that I believe that it's aliens, and it sounds like we're all in the same mindset. But where we have, you know, in the recent years had reason to believe that there is life is on Mars. So what I thought was interesting is today NASA publicly denied that we had ever found life on Mars. And what's interesting about that is back in the 70s during the Viking missions, there was a test that was performed. And the results of that were not fully conclusive in either direction. So the test was they would try and plant nutrients into the ground, into the soil. They would see if they could find any type of gas that was emitting from that area as a result. So you think like methane gas or carbon gas. And that would have been signs that there was some type of biology taking place. Something was digesting something. And that was going to be the evidence. And so what they did is they did that in one place. And then they went to a different location in the same area, and they did the same thing, but they cooked the earth there first to eliminate any potential microbial life. And what they found was they found traces of gas in one of the tests on the soil that was not cooked, and then they did not find it in the soil that was cooked. And so some of the debate that's been going back and forth in the last couple of weeks is, why hasn't this been released to the public? This is conclusive evidence that there is potentially life, and it's only being augmented by the fact that we recently have found reason to believe that there are salt lakes on Mars, which is one of the foundational building blocks of life. So I think it would be pretty cool if we found, even if it wasn't intelligent life, some signs of life on Mars.
Absolutely. I would agree. It would change everything that life appears in more than one place.
Wasn't Mars once, believed to have had a different atmosphere that would have been more conducive to life as we know it. Maybe if you go back millions of years, like an atmosphere for one.
I think billions of years, but yeah, and also liquid water, they suspect.
Was it Neptune where they also thought it may have been like an Earth twin?
That far out?
Venus.
No, it wasn't. Yeah, thank you, Alex.
Venus is about the same size as as Earth. And
yeah, where
maybe
they expected that it could have been another planet that could have harbored life, and then they realized that it was, what, like raining methane. But basically, I think the idea there had been that it could have once been very much like Earth with, runaway greenhouse gases, basically, ultimately heating it to the point where it could no longer sustain life and turning it into the hellscape that it is today.
That sounds like global warming.
I mean, maybe on a different scale. I've heard there are scientists that think our Earth will eventually go in the same direction, not necessarily as a result of like climate change, but just in terms of natural occurrences.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, totally.
Well, Venus is has, even though it's further away from the sun than Mercury, which is the closest planet, is actually hotter because of the greenhouse gases.
Global warming is real, right? It doesn't matter what globe it is. It's real somewhere in the universe. An interesting theory kind of ties back to, Nate, what you were saying about Mars being habitable in the past. Have you guys, this is one of my favorite space words. Have you ever heard of the term panspermia?
Doesn't it mean life originating in one place that seeds life in a different place?
That's exactly it. So there's people that actually believe that that a huge asteroid or something, kind of like what killed the dinosaurs, may have hit Mars back in the day. And the dust and the rocks and the plumes from that found their way to Earth and were ultimately the seeding for life here. And so, you know, it doesn't take more than, you know, call it 1,000 years to erase all trace of life on any planet or any place. And so what if we had a whole civilization on Mars, some catastrophic event took place, and we are now the results of panspermia all across the galaxy. But we found
so
a nice
basically home Mars there. Inseminated Earth.
That's what I'm saying.
We're Martians.
And we don't even know if Mars asked permission first. But we're assuming that there's the potential that that's how life could have potentially started here.
Then the question is, where did that life come from? Doesn't really answer too much.
Chicken and egg situation.
Well, so that's a good segue, Alex, because there's something that I find so interesting that I've heard in a number of different shows and in my research on space, right? And that's it, when you think about not just what aliens would look like, but if there are aliens and why they exist. Have you ever heard Neil deGrasse Tyson say, shout out to Neil again, we're going to call him out in all of our episodes, I'm sure. Have you ever heard him make the point that we are all stardust? That we're all made of stars, right? What's so interesting about that statement is that if you look at what makes up a star, right, it's hydrogen, it's helium, it's carbon, it's oxygen, it's silicon, and it's iron. And over the stages of that star's life, it'll start to expand and collapse until it eventually dies. Well, if you look at human element makeup, what is the most prevalent element in our body? That's hydrogen, followed by carbon, and then oxygen. Those are all the same building blocks of stars. And so the point here being, who's to say that life didn't just start everywhere, wherever there's a star, and all those elements in just the right conditions have found their way to these different places where it can start to sprout just by natural causes. And so when you start to think about things like what aliens would look like, because we all originate from the same place, right? All stars have the same composition, the same way of interacting with other stars and the universe around them. Who's to say that we don't all just look the same, or that all life originated the exact same way?
Yeah. So I'm actually, that was a large part of what something that I'd written down that I'd wanted to talk through, Todd. And I totally agree with that. And I want to kind of take that in go in a similar direction with it, but kind of maybe off to a tangent. Just talking about numbers, right? So if we talk about that in the context of the Drake equation, right? There are 21 and a half, roughly, sextillion planets in the universe that are, I guess, I think that's the visible universe. But anyway, if you look at the idea that we are essentially made up of literally, like human beings are made of the most common elements in the universe, and there are 21 and a half sextillion other planets where this could have happened, I think it would be arrogant to think that it would not have happened anywhere else. That we won some kind of cosmic lottery, you know, being made of the most common building blocks in the universe with so many places that could theoretically harbor life, it seems like it would have had to have happened.
Yeah, agreed. It all come back to the paradox.
Yeah, totally agree. So the numbers that I read is that there's an estimated 1 billion galaxies, and that's a conservative number, 1 billion galaxies in the universe, as high as 2 trillion estimated galaxies in the universe. And taking it to our galaxy alone, the Milky Way, there's 1 billion to 3 billion stars, and each star has the ability to have planet or planetary system around it. So it's estimated that 20 to 50% of this stars, of 300 billion stars, have planetary systems around it. So let's just assume for a second that maybe one star per million star systems have life, then there's 100,000 active civilizations in the galaxy alone, or the Milky Way alone, or systems that have life. So, I mean, to Mark's point, I mean, it's almost impossible for us to assume that there's not life in the galaxy or our galaxy.
Yeah, and so the question there becomes, when you start out with life and you try to get to the type of advanced civilization that could reach out and contact other civilizations, there's a bunch of other variables. But one of the things is, if you reach the type of sophistication that could send and receive electromagnetic signals over long distances, there might be a reason for you not to do that for survival purposes. And or you may just want to like go inward into your own matrix-like future civilization. So what if all there's tons of civilizations, but they're all dark and they're not emitting radiation on purpose?
Yeah, it's a great point, Nate. And I think, well, let me ask you this. Would you agree that another part of that is the fact that the universe was all created at the same time, right? And so we know that there's different ages of different stars, obviously. But part of me also thinks we can't be that far or that far behind another civilization. I know that's kind of naive to think, but just the fact of how long Earth's been around for, what, 4 to 5 billion years? And it took this long for us to develop where we are, obviously exponentially in the last 100 years or so. If what we're saying is true, that everybody originates from the same place and we know the age of the universe, then I would argue that there's probably not anyone that's too far more advanced than us, but that could be a completely naive statement for me to make.
Yeah, I would disagree with that, just because there's no telling how long it would take for that first spark of life to kind of come into existence, you know, based on distance from stars, based on a million other factors that I can't even process with my tiny little brain. But I think that it's very possible that life could have developed on Earth millions of years before it did. And I mean, even if you think, all right, you know, human civilization has been around for, let's say that humanity has existed for 1 million years.
I think that's approximately what's accepted.
Let's say that humanity started 1,001,000 years ago instead. We would be 1,000 years ahead of where we are right now. That's and 1,000 years in the grand scheme of 1 million is, well, I was going to say it's negligible, but you can actually do the exact mathematics to find out. But yeah, where I'm going with this is 100 years can make a tremendous difference in when it comes to the evolution of a species. Like where we're going to be in 100 years is going to be far beyond where we are right now if we're still alive as a society. So I think to say that no one would theoretically be that far ahead of us, you know, kind of short-sighted when it comes to the speed of evolution once it gets going.
So what do you think then is stopping them from reaching out to us beyond what Nate said? Because I think what Nate said makes a lot of sense, right? At some point, you know, if you look at where we're developing technology in virtual reality and augmented reality and all this stuff, we're sending ourselves to this point of sitting in a chair all day and virtually living our lives. And so not that I hope that that ever happens, because I don't, but let's just say, to Nate's point, a civilization does reach that part where they're like, you know what, we want to be cut off from everybody else in the galaxy, in the universe. We want to do our own thing, and we're in our little simulation here. Outside of that, you know, if they are that advanced, what do you think would be stopping them from reaching out to us?
I think it'd be a lot of factors. So, I mean, there are the obvious ones of, you know, self-preservation, disinterest, things like that. But we are also, I think, projecting our own reality and our own human characteristics, and the fact that, you know, we as people are curious. And to assume that, you know, life that formed on another planet would have those same ideas, that same mentality, I think is, you know, too much to assume, if you will. So, you know, let's just say, for example, if there's life on another planet that is intelligent, what's to say that that life would have the range of emotions that we as human beings would have? They might have emotions that are far more limited or vastly, vastly more expansive than the emotions that we're capable of processing. So, you know, their desires, you know, the things that they want, the things that they need to survive might be completely different. And, you know, for us to think like, oh, you know, like maybe they're just not interested in us. Like, well, maybe it's not even that we're on their radar. You know, it might just be that curiosity doesn't exist to them. You know, it's completely possible that life is entirely different in basically every way other than, you know, some, say, for example, the chemical composition and, you know, carbon base.
It's a great point. Actually, I heard a funny thing today. You know, we classify life, generalizing here, into plants or animals on Earth. But what's to say that there's not a third definition or a fourth or a fifth that's elsewhere? And that brings some really, like, funny things to the surface. An alien could be observing us from far away. We have no idea about that. And they see us eating meat, or they look at us and they say, oh my God, there's these smart creatures that are made of meat. Can't go to that planet. These people are psycho, you know? And when you think about what can be consumed, if you just think about what we know today, right? The only non-animal product or byproduct or food that we can eat for nutritional value in the world is salt, right? Everything else needs to be made by an animal, or, you know, is a plant, which is alive. So the only non-living thing that we can consume for nutritional value is salt. And you look at plants, you know, plants feed off sunlight, which I would argue is a much more effective way to get your sustenance and your energy. So maybe they've developed in a way where that's all they need. And they look at us and they're just like, these are either super primitive or barbaric people that are eating all these living things, and we want nothing to do with them.
Sometimes it's fun to think about life. Well, Nate said before, life as we know it, life as we don't know it. You know, maybe aliens out there are walking lava monsters and we can't even perceive of them. Or maybe they're flying clouds that eat each other. Maybe we just have no sense of what these aliens are.
Yeah, that was theorized by Carl Sagan.
Alex, were you trying to take credit for a great book?
I would never take credit for Carl Sagan's work.
Let me leave us on this with this particular topic, why we haven't seen them, and I'd actually be curious of you guys' response to this as well. So when you think about our outreach, because one thing that's for certain about the human species is that we are curious and we want to reach out and find these new life forms. And so when you think about how that would take place, the first most primitive way we've done that, and really the major way we do it today, is through radio signals, right? And so our first radio communications into space happened in 1974. It's only 45 years ago. Now, how far can those radio signals theoretically travel? What is that, 45 light years, right? If they're traveling about the speed of light. So 45 light years.
They've gone nowhere.
The Milky Way, just our galaxy, is 105,000 light years in diameter. Think about that. We are a small miniature BB in an Olympic-sized swimming pool in terms of what we've sent our signals out to. And so if you think about, you know, the likelihood of aliens contact or being here on Earth or us reaching out and making contact, we would have to, assuming that everybody's around the same level of sophistication, or even if they're more or less, you know, that makes that sphere, instead of 45 years, you know, 1,000 years, even at 1,000 years of sending communications out. First of all, we may not be able to interpret the types of signals we're getting because we don't know that technology yet, but probably more likely, it just hasn't reached us. The vast scale of our own galaxy and then the scale of the universe on top of that is just so unbelievable that there's probably just no way that those signals either going out or coming in could ever be collected in a meaningful capacity.
Yeah, totally. And then you also have to factor in that it takes double the time. So the signal has to get there and then come back. So that's twice as much time. You know, even if an alien might have, alien civilization might have received our signals 20 years ago, that signal is still working its way back to us.
It's just one of many questions like that ties into your point earlier, Todd, about how there's so much similarity between different star systems that they could give rise to similar life. And if that life gave rise to a similar set of shared values and thoughts across all higher life forms, including that curiosity, and it seems like how could we get this far and not be able to cross that next like gulf to actually make contact? Like why would a universe end up having all this intelligent life spread out all over and none of it could get in touch with any of the rest of it? It's just like just so weird to think about. It's one of the very strange things.
I absolutely agree. And I mean, going back to the scale of just the Milky Way, we said 105,700 light years to be exact. One light year. You know, this is another pop quiz. Will, I'm actually going to go to you first. We haven't heard from you in a little while. How far does light travel in 1 year?
Exactly one light year.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the group consensus, one light year.
You are absolutely correct. If you were to translate that into miles, though, 6 trillion miles. And there's 105,700 of those that make up the diameter of the Milky Way. We are so freaking small. It is unbelievable. And so, you know, I think, you know, as we round out here and sort of wrap up this discussion, I'd love any closing thoughts from the group.
Don't get probed.
I don't know if I can top that, but the one thing that did come to my mind was, you know, we were talking about if we were to find that life existed on Mars, how that would change everything. And my initial gut reaction was, I mean, no, it wouldn't change everything because, you know, it seems so likely that life is out there anyway. And the more I think about it, the more I feel like that initial reaction is wrong. And that actually would change everything because of scale. Because, you know, we're talking about, is there intelligent life elsewhere? And, you know, what are the odds and the Drake equation and all of that? But when it comes down to it, if there is life as close as Mars, there is nothing, well, outside of the moon, like there is no celestial body closer to us. Like if it's there, it's freaking everywhere.
Oh yeah. What's interesting is that 1974 Viking mission that collected those types of samples to look for life was the last mission with the explicit purpose of that. And we're sending a new one that'll get to Mars in February of 2021. And that will hopefully, as a result of some of the findings of the Curiosity rover in the past year, that's hopefully going to lend us some additional insights there. And Mark, that might be the thing that that tips the scales, to your point. So thank you guys for the discussion today. This was awesome. Really appreciate all the input and feedback. We are at a group consensus that we think alien life exists. We can't wait to meet them. We may be Martians ourselves, you know, if we were panspermiate all over the Earth. But I'll leave you with this, right? There are trillions of stars that we know about in our universe, and more stars actually than grains of sand on Earth, if you can believe it. And if we're truly the only life that exists, it would be a miracle. And if there's one thing that science disagrees with, it's the existence of miracles. Thank you guys so much for joining today. And we look forward to the next episode of the podcast where we will be talking about Elon Musk's new venture, Starlink. Thank you. Have a great day.